of a shape up or care if you've let all the fans down.
Can we not lock it?
It's a fact. I am not playing mind games. I am talking about facts.
I always said if I was Aladicio, they'd probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
The answer questions on anything. Religious, politics, health, you know, sexual problems.
Look at his face! Just look at his face!
None of you, except for those two, have done anything to justify the money that you earn. None of you. Disgrace.
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
All right, welcome along to Team 33. I'm Raf Giallo. You can get in touch with us on Twitter at Team 33. We're also on Facebook and also on iTunes. That crackling you hear in the background is Joe Coffey, who is phoning it in again. Joe.
Yes, well, you know, work calls, Raf, and actually work those calls this time. So
fix your phone line,
your,
Joe.
Your real paying job rather than this highly lucrative Team 33 gig that you got.
I'm in the office in my real job, so there you go.
Derek.
How are you, Raf? And Joe, how are you?
I'm Dad. Back.
Who are here in person. Anyway.
Bracket's still Mayo for Sam though. Hasn't changed.
Yeah, no, I was watching the game. Unfortunate for Tom Parsons as well. One of the worst injuries
I think
I've
we
seen.
All, I think we all have to send our get well soon messages to Tom Parsons. What a hero.
Bad knee injury.
I know. He'll be back though. He was tweeting this morning. And
it was a lovely message you sent this morning in fairness. Yeah. So,
some man for one man.
Yeah.
Yeah, but look, Mayo made it all the way through the qualifiers last year. Not all the way, but at least to Croke Park in September.
They made it all the way to the final, so yeah.
So there's hope. There's hope there yet.
We're not gone yet.
We'll see.
Anyway, the optimist, Joe. Fair play to you.
Anyway, before we get to like the Premier League review side of things, there was a bit of controversy involving the Ireland under-17s last night.
A bit of an understatement. And controversy doesn't quite say. We were robbed.
So essentially there was a incident during the penalty shootout which resulted in the Irish goalkeeper getting sent off first, second yellow, and the penalty kick retaken, and the Dutch score from that, and Martin O'Neill then marches on the field in anger.
That was great, by the way. Martin O'Neill running onto the referee. The referee's only too delighted that Roy Keane wasn't there, because imagine Roy Keane shouting at you if you've made a decision like that. I think Keane was apparently in the stands.
Well, it was I know you apply the letter of the law, but I was reading that. I was reading though that the referee had warned two Dutch players about, or the Dutch keeper twice about coming off his line,
and apparently also the Irish keeper. Apparently, he had warned the Irish keeper, but still, at the same time.
But even when you watch it back, it was negligible. It was he came out as your man's foot was going back. He came off the line then, and you're just like,
feel at the time, I remember watching it live and thinking, I'm a bit worried about that, because it looked like he did move off the line, only because he moved his feet so quickly.
Yeah.
I still don't know for sure if he did move off his line. It looked like he did from one angle.
They're so let's be honest, if you want to watch real coming off the line, watch the penalty shootout between Spain and South Korea and the
absolutely. And but the point
keeper,
is even
the
if it's
keeper was almost on the penalty on the penalty spot, he'd come so far off.
We've seen penalties retaken plenty of times as well, but we've never seen a yellow card. Yeah. I know that's only a fairly new rule, but come on, these are the under-17s, lads. I mean, it's the last penalty. Why are you doing giving him a yellow card? I mean,
he looked devastated.
He did, and rightly so. It was absolutely ridiculous. Whatever about retaking the penalty, which was harsh in itself, but still, okay, they're the rules, that's fine. It would have been maybe harsh if, from the Netherlands' point of view, if it wasn't retaken. So maybe you can see why the penalty was given as a retake. But to send the keeper off,
I think it's so weighted in favour of the penalty. I know we've had discussions and people say, it's a 50-50. It's not the whole situation is geared in favour of the attacker.
But it has to be.
You know, and that's what I said. So the advantage could have been, we're retaking it, keeper. You know, and I don't see what sending off the keeper really achieves in this. If anything, it gives them more advantage to the attacker, because the other team is then psychologically
out of
it.
Of course, was it then,
Yeah, no, big time. I'm putting the, I think it was the defender who went in goal, obviously he had absolutely no chance of saving.
Well, I'll put it this way. Would it happen in a senior match in the World Cup?
Yeah, I don't think so.
It wouldn't.
It probably has to now. I mean, that's the precedent that's been set.
When has precedent ever...
absolutely. No, I just thought it was just... There was no need for the yellow card. Considering the circumstances, absolutely no need for the yellow card. The retake was harsh enough. Leave the goalkeeper on to try and make another. By the way, it was a great save, even if he was off his line. It was an unbelievable save that he made in that fifth penalty. So
I just wonder what's going through the referee's mind, because he thinks he has a process in his mind that I'm going to send this kid. Let's take that language out. I'm going to send this player off, and he must know. I have never seen anything like this before.
Yeah.
For at this level, even I remember when I think there was an Arsenal League Cup penalty shootout, and there was one player sent off, and everyone's worried, who's gonna how do we take who's going to take the 11th penalty if Arsenal already have someone sent off. So like penalty shootouts is kind of very set formats the way they're done. And I just don't know what the referee was thinking. I'm going to send this kid off and send this player off. And I'm just going to attract all his attention to myself, even if I'm right.
No, absolutely.
So I think there's a little bit of ego involved here. Like, just there must have been some ego involved here, because what was he trying to achieve? Like, no one's going to look, no one in the World Cup's going to say, God, you know, better not dive off our line now. Did you see that Netherlands-Ireland under-17s game? Set a precinct there, you know? No, he's just attracting attention to himself. Yeah. I think that's, there's a definite ego involved here.
Absolutely, yeah. I was just, like, you say take the words out, take the words of being a kid out. Mm. You have to put that in. I mean, like,
okay, well,
like for me, you have to. I mean, these are under-17s. It's the under-17s.
Yeah, well, the kid was crying. He was yeah, but crying after the
even leaving the crying bit aside, but these are under-17s, I mean, for crying out loud. You have to realise that you're refereeing under-17s. So you're not refereeing 36-year-olds. Okay, listen, fine. If the keeper is constantly coming off his line and penalties have to be retaken constantly, then fine. Yeah, then you can see maybe why a yellow card might be given, because you're disrupting the flow of the penalty shootout. But, you know what I mean? For this situation, it was the first time, obviously, that the keeper saved it. I mean, a retake should have sufficed, and that should have been it, really. And if a retake had happened, to be honest, I would have gone, that looked fair enough from my point of view, and I would have held my hands up.
And what also,
it's just the yellow card has just thrown everything.
What also influences it was that it wasn't, if I'm correct in remembering it, it was a defining moment, obviously, in the penalty shootout, but it wasn't a penalty shootout over.
No, it would have gone to sudden death.
Exactly. Yeah. So, that's the thing. It's not like that direct result of that infringement in the referee's mind would have eliminated the Dutch. There was still a chance for them to come back from that. So that's what I think, sending off just now, completely unnecessary.
And again, I mean, yesterday we didn't know this rule. There is a rule in the rule book that says that if a keeper moves off his line, it is a yellow card. So this rule is there. If the player misses, then it has to be retaken and the keeper gets a yellow card, which is a double punishment for a very slight infringement from my point of view. But like I say, you have to use common sense. You're refereeing, first of all, under 17s. Even leaving that aside, it's a high pressure situation, a penalty shootout, one player against one player, especially when it's the fifth penalty of potentially the last penalty of the whole shootout. The referee has to use some common sense in that regard, and he just didn't yesterday.
Yeah, but it's one of those rules that is open to inconsistency. It's like the one you know, in the box, where for a while they were going to punish players for holding and pulling shirts and stuff. And you saw it kind of applied at the very beginning, and then it just kind of tails off. The rule is still there, but it's not obeyed.
Exactly.
And it's just frustrating then, because
football is about,
either stick to it or don't have that
exactly,
rule
but there are millions of rules in the rule book that aren't applied every single week, because they can't. If you're literally to punish, the referee is to call up every single foul and every single incident that is in the rule book, the game would never flow whatsoever. The referee has to use his own judgment in terms of letting the game flow or letting the penalty shootout flow. That's the whole beauty of, like, otherwise you just have a robot running around and, you know, calling when it's a foul, calling when it's a free or whatever. So the referee has to use his own judgment. He just didn't yesterday in the shootout, and that's the most disappointing part from my point of view.
Right, let's move on to something else. Anyway, Premier League is over. I think, Joe, you feel a bit better about it now, particularly with Liverpool's run in the Champions League, because I know you're very downbeat about football in general.
There's a shocker, Joe being downbeat about Premier League football.
Sorry, Raph, what were you asking me there?
Why did you do the little laugh then after yeah. Anyway, look, I was just saying, you've been downbeat about football in the Premier League, but I think by the end of the season you seemed a little bit more hopeful about football in general.
But then I realised that between actually the games taking place on Sunday and today, I hadn't even looked at the scores, because I've been so engrossed in what had happened in the football championship with Mayo. So I went back and looked at the scores. I knew Arsenal had won, and that was about it. But, I mean, sure, there was nothing to play for. There was nothing happening. The most interesting thing was Barcelona somehow managed to lose their unbeaten record on the last day of the season.
By arresting Messi.
Yeah. And then, like, I mean, Spurs...
They're 5-1 like, down and came back to 5-4 with 20 minutes to go. It looked like they were going to...
Like, Liverpool beat Brighton. I think we all expected that. And then everything else was decided. Like, Chelsea lost 3-0 to Newcastle. Arsenal gave Wenger a good send-off. I mean, City did get their 100 points. And, I mean, it was finished about a week ago. It looked like it was when we recorded this show last week, it looked like it was going to be exciting, but then all the results went the other way for it not to be. You know, we needed the results to go a certain way, and they didn't. I think Chelsea screwed. Huddersfield getting the result to Chelsea put an end to any kind of tension on the last day of the season.
And obviously West Brom getting relegated.
And what relegated West Brom, I think.
Yeah.
It was just another end of the season thing where everything was decided already. I think we've probably having it a bit too much lately.
Yeah, I don't think we've actually talked about who our players of the season have been, or player of the season.
Well, I mean, there's only one.
We may have done this segment a few times already, like, but I've forgotten.
I think it's
But I'll make actually I'll make it a bit more difficult. Let's take Salah and De Bruyne off the table. Who is the player of the season outside of those two? Because they're the two obvious candidates, and Salah probably would be number one.
Outside of Salah and De Bruyne,
I think the momentum at the moment, I suppose, maybe not looking over the whole season, a lot of momentum behind Roberto Firmino at the moment.
Firmino,
the whole season, maybe not. I've come around to the fact that, and when it's kind of outlined to you, kind of what he brings to the game, it's like, oh, actually he's been doing this for a long time now, and if that's what we're valuing now massively, again back to strikers, not, well, he does score goals, but he wasn't always banging them in. God,
Spurs, I mean, Harry Spurs, Kane still had an unbelievable season.
Yeah, but I think his own standards have made it kind of an average season.
Well, was it? He scored 41 goals in all competitions.
Only 41 goals.
Yeah, but I think that incident where he claimed the goal, I think that's put a lot of people off him.
That has nothing to do with anything all the same.
No, it doesn't, but it's still...
he's entitled to be put off.
He's just not as popular, I don't think, based on that.
Well, wait till he scores a goal in the World Cup for England, and everyone will love him again.
He was doing very well, and then he obviously got injured a couple of months ago, and then he came back, and he hasn't really been on fire since he came back from that injury.
But he scored twice on the final day, obviously doesn't matter.
He just hasn't been as free scoring as he was before the injury, and then heading into the World Cup, that has to be a worry for England. But up until he got injured, he was kind of pushing. He wasn't pushing Salah close for player of the year, in fairness, but he was doing very, very well. I think after that he kind of tailed off a small bit.
I would throw in Raheem Sterling, maybe
Sané,
as much like the best improved.
Are we just throwing
just names? Names like
David Silva for me had an incredible season, and I loved,
did he not miss lots of the season?
I love David. He did, because his child was ill or something, but he still played a huge part in their title winning season.
But like, I suppose when you're absent, it is difficult to be.
For me, David Silva is one of those players.
Speak for yourself on that phone.
Yeah, absolutely,
there, Joe.
What? When you're absent, it doesn't really mean the same sort of thing. For me, David Silva is like a player like Paul Scholes, who's going to be appreciated towards the end of his career. I think he's a great, great player, and he's a player that. Pep Guardiola is getting the most out of now, which is great to see as well, because he doesn't deserve to be out wide in a 4-4-2 like he was under Mancini and stuff like that. He deserves to be smack bang the centre of things, and he is now under.
I would say Pep has made a mockery anyway of everyone who was against him when he first joined, saying he wouldn't do it in the Premier League, considering he's managed to get 100 points.
Yeah, Wednesday night in Stoke,
he doesn't have to worry quite well about forever now.
How many records did they break? 106 goals. 100 points.
Most wins.
Like, Pep Freddy made the... Yeah. Freddy dominated the Premier League this season.
Absolutely. And that has to go... That has to... when you compare United's season with City's, obviously United had a poor season. But then if City hadn't had such a record-breaking season, United would have been within 5, 6, 7 points probably of City come towards the end of the season. Probably undeservedly, because United were far and away...
You could argue far from a, United wouldn't have... Like that, United mightn't have slipped up in a couple of games.
Absolutely, exactly. But United weren't a title-winning side this season. They were average a lot for the vast majority of the season. But if City hadn't been as good as they were, then United would have been within maybe 6, 7 points of them come the end of the season. And like you say, may not have slipped up against, I think it was Brighton a few weeks ago that they lost to, and Huddersfield they lost to as well. There's a few games that they could easily have maybe won or at least gotten points out of if they had been in a title race. So, United's season was poor compared to City's, but in general, you have to look at it and go, okay, didn't play great football, but didn't finish off too badly in terms of points.
Isn't it incredible? I'm looking at it here. Burnley finished 7th in the table, scored 36 goals, conceded 39, and with a -3 goal difference, and still finished 7th.
-3.
Well, it just tells you it's basically a two-tier league in a way.
They actually didn't win for their last 5 matches. They got 2 points over their last 5 games and they still finished 7th. It goes to show how far ahead they were of everybody else.
Yeah, and the fact also that Arsenal were having their worst season under Wenger and still finished sixth. Well above them.
Yeah, like Arsenal could have lost a load of games there in the run, and they still would have finished 6th.
That's what I was going to bring that up when we were going to record last week, and I just couldn't make it. But it's interesting how these narratives build around teams, and they're having terrible seasons, even though, as we were talking there, Man United doing quite well.
Like, 81 points they finished on.
Just overshadowed by the fact that a team ahead of them had a record-breaking season. Like, we go back to when these dominant Barcelona teams under Pep win the league. Real Madrid were still not far off. Mm-hmm. And some years beat them. And and this is one of the best teams ever. It's just interesting these narratives build around another perfect example there. Well, Burnley, what an excellent season for them. You know, really, really solid up in seventh.
I suppose,
and as I said, their Arsenal terrible season and still managed to finish ahead of them.
Oh yeah, sure, Arsenal finished sixth. But like, yeah. I suppose the problem for United is the fact that City, Guardiola joined City at the same time Mourinho joined United,
and also this time last year they were both probably at the level where they weren't good enough.
They were both neck and neck last year. You could argue.
Absolutely, yeah. And then obviously over the summer, City spent very, very wisely. Spent a lot of money, but spent it very wisely. And this season they've been incredible. But like I say, United got 81 points, and other seasons that could be enough to win the league, if not come within 5 points of winning the league. You know what I mean? And like I say, they dropped stupid points in the last few games. So I've been the one to criticise United and Mourinho for the football that they're playing, and they've been average and inconsistent a lot this season. But 81 points says that they've done a pretty good job in terms of winning games. If not being playing free flowing and exciting football, they're winning games. And I mean, can you really? That's the whole point of being a Premier League manager, I guess. You know,
any Arsenal players in that list of best players in this season, Joe?
Not really, Raf. I mean, who could you say? Aubameyang.
I was just setting you up for that one. Aubameyang.
Yeah, looks very promising.
He's had a fairly encouraging end to the season.
I was surprised actually how well like Lacazette did. I thought that would just be in and out.
Lacazette could actually be quite good.
Yeah,
he's definitely shows a lot of potential.
Good point, Joe. What do you make about Mikel Arteta? It looks like Arteta is going to be the next Arsenal manager, which I think personally is an incredible appointment. I'd be a huge fan of that. The fact that he came through Arsenal, he played with Arsenal. He's obviously done a bit of coaching under Pep Guardiola, and now he's going to come back. I think it's excellent. Yeah, if it works out, but I think it's an excellent appointment from this point of view. What do you think?
Oh, I don't know. It's hard to know. Like, I mean,
well, you wanted Mauricio Pochettino about 3 weeks ago.
That was only like, you know, if you could have any manager. So I suppose it's not a big name, but you could say, but on his pluses, he's been with Pep Guardiola for the last couple of seasons, so he would have learned an awful lot.
Would you not just be better getting in Neil Warnock? You know you're going to sack him after 6 months. You know he's going to be sacked after 8. So you may as well just bring him in.
This is different to United, because the expectation at United was, if you come second, it's a failure. If Arsenal come fourth next season, it's a huge achievement, because they've come sixth the last two seasons. Even if they come fifth, even if they come seventh next season, it's like, okay, well, you haven't done as well as last season, but still, you know, you're building something here. The expectation is completely different. For Moyes, him coming second was a failure, and he ended up coming seventh in the end.
Would you say Alan Pardew's thrown his CV in?
Absolutely, he has. He's thrown his CV into
anything.
I'd love
to get that phone call.
Into the Barcelona manager's job. I think it's a good appointment, but I that's what I would love from a United point of view, as a United fan, to see someone who played for United come through the ranks and coach somewhere else before becoming the United manager. Like, there's no one in the pipeline that would be anywhere near becoming the United manager. But like, from an Arsenal point of view, I think it's a great opportunity, because the expectation isn't there. You can bring in a young manager who obviously has coaching experience under Pep Guardiola, of all players of all managers in the world to have. Bring him in. And like I say, hopefully he'll do a decent job. And the fact that he's an Arsenal player, or was an Arsenal player for a few years, means he knows the club inside out. He's kind of coming through the Arsene Wenger thing as well, because let's not dismiss Arsene Wenger completely as an absolute failure. He did a pretty good job there for much of his time.
Wenger's not a failure.
Well, the last 10 years obviously he has been. A lot of people are saying that, but like,
a lot of it was shaped by hyperbole as well.
Yeah, well, the last 10 years he hasn't exactly been a huge success. But my point is that obviously you would hope that Arteta took a lot from Arsene Wenger playing under him, and Pep Guardiola, two of the best managers we've seen over the last 20 years.
Well, Arsenal are looking for one of these students of the game, like, you know, one of these like tactic nerds who will be studying his tactic book all the time and figuring out the opposition. Yeah. And I suppose, you know, Arteta may fit that mould rather than some other managers who are less that way, if you know what I mean. Yeah. I mean, you might as well go for Arteta as going for, you know, some kind of other young foreign manager that's kind of unknown, was it Silva that was with Watford at the start of the season?
Yeah.
You know, you might as well go with the likes of Arteta than go with someone like that. and give him a go because he knows the club. Like, if you can't get somebody like someone, say, for like the Juventus manager or something like that, you might as well go for Arteta, because at least Arteta's been with City. Whereas, like, you look at Patrick Vieira and you're kind of like, he's over in New York.
Yeah.
You know, Arteta's been learning under the most influential manager in the game currently.
You wonder where Arteta is in the ranking of where Arsenal's hierarchy wanted their manager. You know, do they want Allegri? Do they want Ancelotti, for example? Or were they kind of always going to go for a younger manager?
Well, I would reckon if they wanted Ancelotti, they would have got him. But I think it would have been the wrong appointment.
Mm.
Because Ancelotti, to be honest, judging by what was said about him when he was at Bayern Munich, doesn't sound too dissimilar to Wenger. In that, like, he would be more of a, you know, quiet, arm around the shoulder kind of thing. I don't think he'd be mad for real tactics and figuring out the opposition. He'd be more like, go out and play, you're the better team, so you should win. You know, that kind of way.
That, yeah, Wenger would have those been, players need a kick up the backside. Some of them, a good portion of them.
Well, certainly Arsenal need somebody who, so they don't even need someone who's going to give players a kick up the backside, but they need somebody who is tactically very aware, very astute, who, instead of putting the team out thinking that they'll win based on the fact that they're a better team, will put a team out that's set up to tactically be prepared to face whoever they face. I mean, really, when you look at Arsenal, a lot of their problems up until their away form this season, a lot of their problems were against the big teams where they just end up getting annihilated, and that's because their tactics, they'd have no tactics. So I suppose you'd be hoping that whoever comes in will have the players tactically drilled so that the players are fully aware what they're supposed to be doing, because that's all what all the other top six, top five teams are like.
You wonder now, I mean, obviously all the talk over the last few weeks has been who'll take the Arsenal job, and then Kovac, the Liverpool assistant manager, left, and there's all talk, well, maybe he might become part of the coaching staff. Rui Faria from United, Mourinho's assistant, has now left. He's leaving at the end of the season from United. You wonder where all these assistant managers are going. You know, there's a lot of talk of them being involved in the Arsenal, in a new Arsenal setup, and maybe that might still be the case. We don't know. That they're going to bring in a lot of coaches from different places. You know what I mean?
Arsenal are definitely clearing out their backroom team. I mean, is Gary Lewin after 23 years, 22 years at the club?
Yeah.
Their physio. He's been let go, and he's only 44. And like, I mean, that definitely raised a few eyebrows, because you would think that someone like that would be, you know, locked in there for good, particularly because he was there. Well, wasn't that Wenger brought him in? I mean, because his brother had been Arsenal's physio before that, I think.
Okay.
So that raised a few eyebrows by all accounts, and it was saying that that's just the start of it. So.
Yeah, because I think they've said Steve Bould can stay on, but it's likely, if Arteta gets it, it's likely he'll leave, because it'll be a weird situation being the assistant to somebody you'd previously coached.
Yeah, and I don't think, like, nobody really knows what Steve Bould's influence was on the team.
I'd never really seen him talking to Wenger on the bench. That was always a thing of just observing whenever the camera pans to them. You never really see them conversing or anything.
No, nobody would be aware of what Steve Bould's role was in that team. So, I mean, to be honest, if it was announced that he was leaving, I don't think many people would be surprised either way.
Yeah, or too upset.
There would be more surprise, I think, if he stays on than if he leaves, to be honest.
And from a United point of view, sorry to go back to United all the time, but I do love them. The fact that Faria is leaving, I wonder if that'll mean an evolution of Mourinho's like coaching style and playing style next season, because obviously a lot of talk has been over the last 10 years, his style of play doesn't suit United, certainly in the last 2 years since he took over, wouldn't suit United. You wonder, is he going to bring in a new assistant coach? I think he wants Carrick to be his assistant long term, or when he gets the coaching badges. But you wonder if he'll bring in an assistant in the short term to try and help bring a change of style to the field of play for United.
I'd be surprised if Mourinho really changes this. Like, rather than a change of style, he might be a small evolution of the style.
Yeah, which, I mean, if United finish next season with 81 points, having played decent football, you can't legislate for City having a record-breaking season every season. You know, if City have another 100-point season next season, you kind of have to hold your hands up sometimes and go, okay, that's fair enough.
The thing about it is, 81 points these days won't win you too many Premier League titles.
Yeah, but like, it's still a very good return.
The last
few years it's been 85, 86 points winning you the league.
They'll need to get about 8 or 9 more.
I can see those 9 points. I've watched games where you can see they're 9 points Man United could make up.
Oh yeah.
You know, there's it's not a case of they were outclassed and that 81 was a good season. Like, you know, or Burnley, I think, had a good season and they got seventh, and they could have, with the run they had in the last few games, could easily have dropped back down to the top 10 in a normal season.
Yeah, like United definitely say they could easily pick up another 9 points, which would win you most Premier League titles.
Oh yeah, you'd have to hope that.
You know, and it's hard to see City get picking up 100 points again next year, to be honest.
Mm.
Their target next year will definitely be ultimately Champions League will be the main target.
Right, let's move it on to manager of the season, not called Pep Guardiola.
Very contentious this for me, because
Sean Dyche, Rafa Benitez, our great pal.
Yeah.
There is...
My talk with Rafa last August really sorted that out.
Did you just say Wenger?
Yeah, we'll give it to him. Go on.
No, even including Pep, I don't see Pep running away with the manager of the year, because there's so many options for me for manager of the year. Roy Hodgson, no one's talking about him. The job he did, came in first 7 games, no goals scored, no points on the board, and he ended up keeping Crystal Palace up fairly comfortably. For me, he has to be seen.
From that England syndrome, and people still think he's some sort of moron after managing Liverpool. He's not at all. It is much harder to not get a crap team relegated than it is to, you know, screw up Liverpool. I really think what he's achieved in his career, it's completely demeaned. And the fact that he took on that horrible England setup and managed to steady the ship into what it was.
Yeah.
You know, I completely agree with you.
Isn't it strange that, like, Allardyce is just getting the oust when he managed to guide Everton to, like, eighth?
But for me, that was always going to happen. He took over last October, November, I think it was. And for me, he was never the long-term choice for Everton. He's not an Everton manager. Everton want to, you know, bring a positive style of play. They're supposed to be an ambitious club. They had Ronald Koeman in last year. You don't go from Ronald Koeman to Sam Allardyce in terms of playing style. So quite clearly, Everton were in relegation trouble last October, November. They brought Sam Allardyce in. I'd say he said, I'm not going to sign a contract at the end of the season. I'll sign a 2-year contract. They wanted to bring in Marcos Silva instead. Silva was at Watford, so he stayed there. So they were kind of stuck with Allardyce, but they said, listen, he'll keep us safe, which he did. For me, there was never a chance that he was going to manage Everton next season. They were obviously always going to bring in another manager. And for me, Silva looks like the obvious choice to bring in, even though he got sacked from Watford last, I think it was Christmas or so. But for me, he's the obvious choice. But I don't think Sam was ever going to last there much longer than the season, for me anyway. But he did a grand job. He did what he was asked to do. Moyes did what he was asked to do. He came in at West Ham, who were struggling at the time, and he got them safe, and he got them fairly, I won't say comfortably safe, but they weren't really in relegation trouble heading into the last few games of the season. And obviously Chris Hughton, the job that he'd done, and Wagner at Huddersfield.
Chris Hughton, that's a very good shout. Yeah.
And Wagner as well, the job that he did at Huddersfield. They're two incredible. So like, include Pep even in that, because Pep obviously did an incredible job, but he had a lot of money to spend as well, to do that, not taking away from what he did this season, but he had a lot of money to spend. With the likes of Wagner, the likes of Hughton, the likes of Benitez, and Roy Hodgson as well.
Great man.
So I think it's all the stuff I told him last August when I was talking to Benitez. I told him how to tactically play properly, how to stay up in the Premier League. But no, they all did a great job, and Pep did a great job as well. But for me, it's really contentious who should get that manager of the season job. And for me, it's Roy Hodgson. And no one's really mentioned Roy Hodgson in the talk about it. It's all about Sean Dyche, who did an unbelievable job as well with Burnley, and obviously Pep. But Roy Hodgson, for me, 7 games in, that's 21 points. They were gone. They had no hope of getting 21 points when he picked up his first point, when they scored their first goal this season.
And yeah, forget actually how long they were into not scoring. Yeah, that's
he
true,
took
actually.
Over their 5 games and no goals, no points. They scored, they went to 2 more games without scoring a goal and picking up a point. And then in their 8th game, I think it was against Chelsea, they beat Chelsea for the first points of the season. And from then on, they did so well. And they were never really in relegation trouble. They had a few dodgy weeks around probably January, February. But apart from that, they did really, really well. So for me, he gets it.
All right, fair enough.
I'd say between him or Hughton. Hughton, I have a soft spot for Hughton.
And well, Wagner, yeah, we all love Hughton, but Wagner as well did a great job. And again, it's not to discount Pep's, you know, what the job that Pep did this season. It's like United have shown over the last few years, you can spend a whole lot of money and doesn't guarantee it to success or playing pretty decent football. So Pep has done a really good job this season, incredible job this season. But the fact that he won the League Cup, didn't they? And the Premier League, they won the double. If they'd won the quadruple, you kind of have to go, okay, fine, Pep, but they didn't. So for me, Roy Hodgson gets it.
All right.
When is the FA Cup final?
This Saturday.
Oh. Who's in it?
Manchester United and Chelsea.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You're so excited by it.
Meaningless game. Like, well, no, it's stupid tournament, stupid trophy, stupid everything. nonsense tournament, the FA Cup.
Why?
It's lost on me. Because it does, because I know you've no hope in hell of getting my attention from that game.
Well, I'd watch it.
Well, it's your United fan.
No, but even if it's really? Not United, yeah.
Nothing gets me excited about the FA Cup.
There's a lot of other stories in this weekend. For example, the whole Mourinho versus Chelsea thing. Conte's last game versus Mourinho.
Yeah, well, sure Chelsea lost the final last year to Arsenal.
Yeah, exactly. But like,
But
Conte's last game will be against Mourinho. There's all that. They hate each other.
Okay.
So there's a lot more stories in there than just who. Like, at the put it this way, Mourinho will want to win a cup. Will want to win a trophy this season. He hasn't won a trophy this season. So if he doesn't win one,
what I feel burned is in recent years is that they've done for years and years and years. The FA Cup coverage starts at whatever 6 a.m. in the morning on the weekend before the whole thing. Yeah, but. And for the last few years, I feel maybe I'm misremembering, burned many years from it. All the build up, like we had that with them, Man United Liverpool games. They're all build up to be the games of the century, and they finish nil-all. It's just been a goal between them.
Last year's FA Cup final was decent.
Who was in it?
Arsenal and Chelsea. It was 2-1 to Arsenal.
All right.
It was actually good to get FA Cup final.
But I used to love the whole build up to games on BBC One, and you'd tune in from 9 a.m. and it'd be all the lads at Wembley. It was great. And then 3 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday, I think it was. That's when it used to be. Now it's 5:15 on Saturday evening.
That's because it was abnormal. It wasn't. There was never the other day in the year where you had like kind of one sport. Like from 6, like not 6 a.m. 9 a.m. it was, it started all the way through.
Yeah.
But, now you can watch literally anything and it's ruined that.
Yeah, maybe.
See that Mario Götze has been left out of Germany.
Yeah, I was actually going to get to this because England have a few interesting. It hasn't been named. Well, obviously, if you're listening to this on Friday, the squad has been named on Wednesday. And what has leaked out so far is that Joe Hart and Jack Wilshere won't be in it. But if they are in it from Wednesday onwards, ignore the rest of what's going to happen here.
Joe Hart and Jack Wilshere,
fair enough that they're left out.
Well, Jack Wilshere hasn't played any football.
Yeah,
he's played a bit more this season, just not well.
Well, he's been missing for it, but he only played a bit. Like I can't really bring a player with you that hasn't played that much football when you've plenty of other.
The only thing about him, he's very different to what they have in terms. There's a bit of guile and stuff there when he's at his best, which of course he hasn't been for a little while. But
yeah. A bit of a risk, now I think.
Is Butland their number one keeper?
No, it looks like it might be Pickford, but he had a horrible weekend when Everton lost at West Ham.
It's mad how, 2 years ago, Hart was the undisputed number one pretty much in England, and now he's not even going to travel. And Götze, obviously, 4 years ago, scored the World Cup winning goal.
That has been a horrible decline.
Yeah.
It's actually sad. Not that, you know, we talk about the Parsons injury or that, those sort of things are sad. It's also sad to see just a player with so much potential, so much talent, just, I don't know what happened.
He had a few health issues. I think there was some metabolic thing. Issue that he had,
but there was
and also a bad form, and also he shouldn't have left Dortmund for Bayern when he did, because it was right before that was announced right before the 2013 Champions League final between those teams, and it's just terrible.
But I remember around the time Pep came into Bayern Munich, people were talking about having Götze as the Messi of Bayern Munich, and how he can become this really influential player for Bayern Munich and for Germany, and it just, like I say, just hasn't happened. It is really sad to see that, like, he won the World Cup 4 years ago for them, and now he's not even in the squad. The squad is, don't get me wrong, it's a very talented squad, so you can see why he's not in it, but still, it's very sad to see that.
At least he's had that moment, though.
Oh, yeah. You wouldn't trade that for
him. Yeah. Look, I'd be living off that.
25,
But I'd still be living off that. Like, if I scored a goal in the World Cup final for Ireland, Jesus, I wouldn't be buying a pint.
You wouldn't be sitting here, Ralph.
No.
When you score the World Cup winning goal at his age, he would have been about 21.
Yeah.
I mean, you probably think that the world is your oyster and God knows where you're going to go. And instead, he was heading into a nightmare of 4 years, basically.
Yeah. Well, it's sad.
Hopefully the next 4 years.
I'm just looking forward. I am always surprised by how entertaining England are at either crashing out or getting far and then crashing out. So I'm just looking forward to whatever narrative they play out. And again, I used to be like, oh God, you know, I used to be one of those kind of really like, I hope they really don't win. I hope they get crashed out. It'd be great if they won it, because then the next crash out would be even greater.
Mm.
So it's actually, it's win-win.
I'm keeping my fingers crossed for Wayne Rooney to get the late call up like he most definitely will, or Andy Carroll. People would be calling for Andy Carroll to be in the squad.
Be calling for Andy Carroll. I hope that they go far, because it keeps it interesting when they go.
Yeah, you know, I don't mind.
It does keep it interesting when England go far.
but yeah. not to win it.
No.
Well, they're not going to win it. I mean,
well, that's not going to happen. But
well, it'll be also very entertaining. Because
to be honest, at this stage, it'd be good to see England play well in it.
Yeah, that's the most frustrating part from my point of view. Like, as a non-England fan, obviously, just seeing them, and there's such a collection of good players that they have, and they have a collection of great players, and they have had that for the last 20 years, and they just play so badly in tournaments. You know, it's just ridiculous how...
Very entertaining.
Yeah, but like, you had Gerard Lampard in midfield, you had Michael Owen up top, Wayne Rooney, you had Rio Ferdinand, John Terry centre, Ashley Cole, they had this great collection of players, and they played awfully 10 years ago, and now they've got the same collection of great players, Sterling in there, who's doing very well this season, Harry Kane, Dele Alli, these players... And still they're playing awful. Like, it's so frustrating.
Maybe they're just overrated.
I remember...
No, but they are decent. They're very good for their clubs. Like, Dele Alli is very good. Harry Kane's very good for his club. Sterling. Like, they can't be very good for their club and then suddenly crap for their country. You know, they're obviously decent players who are playing in a team that can't play football properly.
It was very interesting because I remember the Iceland game so well from the last tournament. I was actually just driving home from the airport in the car with the radio on, and the England game was on, and England were losing. And actually, it was the guys on Off the Ball. They had an English journalist who just turned the game off and was sitting out in his garden, not even watching, already resigned. And the game was maybe 10-15 minutes left to go, just resigned, and it was just so entertaining.
It's the Steve,
it's like how much they
Steve McLaren,
it's the Steve McLaren live on Sky Sports, yeah. As the goals are going in.
I put €50 on England to win against Iceland, and I remember
how much did you put on?
€50.
Oh, those team 33 wages go so far.
Absolutely.
You can throw it away on a meaningless
Euro. We picked them
game.
To get to the final in our
oh, we did, yeah. Yeah.
I put them on a double now, and myself and my housemate Jamie had put money on them as well, and we were sitting down watching it, and like, when England got the goal from the penalty in the first few minutes, we jumped around celebrating like Ireland had scored. and then at 2-1, they were 2-1 down at half time. I turned to Jamie and go, oh man, I can't believe we're losing to these crowds.
Yeah. I don't think England believed
but
it either.
I think it, like, I don't remember it, but obviously the 1990 World Cup, where there seemed to be the last time, even though they did crash out in horrible circumstances, It seemed like they came away from that thinking that was good. Alright, we crashed out, we probably could have got, if we did this, that and the other, we might have won that game, but there was at least optimism. I like some of these England players. I like a lot of these England players. I think I could root for them in that way. I don't want to see them in misery. It's very entertaining, but I would also not mind if they actually went far.
They didn't qualify for Euro 92, did they? Or did they?
England. I don't think England qualified for
They didn't qualify for the 96? World Cup 94, but
no, they were,
96
no, they
hosted.
No, they were. I think they were in 92.
Were they in 92? But obviously 94, yeah. They didn't even qualify for the World Cup. Like you say, they came out in 1990 going, yeah, listen, this is the start of a new thing. We've got Gaza
we'll go
here.
We've got the next Euros and
we've
we'll
got,
do something.
Yeah, Lineker here. You
but
know,
at the same time, they went to Euro 96 and got to the semi-finals and came in the final.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then sacked Venables. But no, like I say, it annoys me when a collection of very good players play so badly on such a consistent basis, and they've done that for the last 20 years. They've had really good players for the last 20 years and really good managers for the last 20 years. You look at likes of Capello and players and managers like that.
Well, they drove they just drove those managers out.
Yeah,
you know,
but it's just nobody could get them playing properly with the collection of players that they had, and it's just frustrating. And then again, I don't care about England, but still, it's just annoying from a neutral's point of view, looking at a collection of players playing so badly and losing to Iceland in the last Euros. It's just
my main gripe with England is we've been robbed of some great possible crash outs, which would have been very entertaining, which would have been Redknapp leading England, which would have been very
that would have been great.
It would have been very entertaining,
yeah, in fairness.
And also, as we've talked many times before, like, I would love to have seen, and we'll never know what Allardyce could have actually done with that team. I still think
he would have got a
decent
job.
I think he could have probably gotten to that semi-final. I really do. They wouldn't have gotten relegated under him anyway, but
you can't get relegated from a group that has Panama and Tunisia in it.
Well, what was the last time around they didn't qualify? Costa Rica, Algeria? No, it wasn't.
It was that was a hard group. The last one, Italy. It was Italy, Uruguay, and Costa Rica.
It was Uruguay. Sorry, it was Uruguay.
Yes, Suarez did them twice.
So we can hope for a fancy quarter final crash out from England this year, where they're getting their hopes up.
I'd like to see them in the semi-final.
They fly
real drama.
They fly Rooney in just for one game only, and everything goes tits up.
I mean, with ourselves not involved, like, you do want somebody.
You're right.
Someone like England involved just makes things interesting.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know who else. Like, if you're not following the England narrative, like, who else is there?
I hope France do well.
I'm looking forward to Egypt and...
yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing Egypt in action. So I hope France do well. I think France is a great team.
Yeah, France. Yeah.
After that, I don't want Germany to go far. I'm kind of bored of
Germany.
Why? I'm just bored of Germany.
But they will go far.
Well, they will, yeah. But
they're Germany.
There's nothing particularly exciting about them these days, I find. But that's because they won it. Like, they won it in 2014. And now, in fairness, they were found fairly wanting at the European Championships. So I'll be interested to see if they've improved from there.
Yeah, it's nice not having a favourite, really. Even the last one, Spain went in thinking Spain would probably turn it on.
You can always pick about seven teams that might win it. Italy will be well missed.
Yeah, should you remember, obviously, 2014, you're right. Spain walked into it going that they were going to walk it.
Yeah, even though they're like, they're not in the, they're not the Spain of 2010 or 2012 when they won those tournaments, but still,
they're
probably going to just turn it on, though.
I think Spain will go far now. I think their minds will be readjusted to the fact that they've been fairly found wanting in the last, in European Championships in 2016 and in the World Cup 2014.
Yeah. What I don't want to see is an Argentina-Portugal final.
No.
Because I know exactly how that's going to be billed if the two of those sides meet.
I'd love that. Come on.
The
final question. The final question.
I wouldn't mind seeing Portugal getting knocked out early because they play quite defensive football. And to be honest, I wouldn't really mind seeing Argentina get knocked out either because judging on the World Cup in 2014, well, I haven't seen them since.
Is there anybody you actually want to qualify for the final apart from England?
France
and England. France. That's all you care about.
Yeah. Argentina in 2014 were incredibly boring. Their tactic evolved around hope Messi does something. Mm. And to be honest, Portugal in 2016 evolved around hope Ronaldo does something.
Yeah, but then he got taken off in the final and they did something without him.
They all have very average players with a couple of outstanding players, whereas you look at the likes of France and stuff and they've got like great players everywhere.
Overrated players.
I don't know, Raf.
But if anything's going to go on the Team 33 merch t-shirts, I don't know, Raf. The staple.
Oh, they've got some very good players in fairness.
Let's play that back.
They have. You look at Pogba, it'll be interesting to see how Pogba does this summer because he's been so poor this season for United in the grand scheme of things.
I'll wait till the World Cup special, any preview special, before I call my winner.
When are we going to do that now, Joe? We'll surely do it on,
let's see, when is the tournament starting? The 15th of June, so that's Friday. We'll have to do it on Tuesday, the 12th of June.
Yeah, that's, okay. That's
very organised from our point of view. We'd usually have it on the 15th morning.
What are we, I suppose, looking through the teams there, is this the year with Belgium actually?
That's another team I'd like to see do well because, again, they have a collection of very good players.
I'm much more excited about them in Euro 2016 and then they were just a letdown.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. But
they've been doing this for a few tournaments now.
Except against us when they actually did play well.
A collection of really good players, if you look at them, they should be able to turn it on. They should turn it on at a tournament and it'd be good to see them. Imagine like the likes of them did turn it on, like Belgium turned it on, England turned it on. It'd be actually a decent World Cup if everyone played to their potential, but sadly,
especially because it
never
might be
happens.
The last one, which actually the first two teams, the next one would be huge.
Oh yeah.
What about Denmark then? I suppose we'll love the little narrative there if they get far. God, yeah, we could have snuck that.
We would have won the World Cup. If Roy Keane had stayed around, we would have won the World Cup in 2002.
But all jokes aside, and just listing off teams instead, I would like to see an African team make it to the semi, a good African make it to the semi finals. It's having that little bit of diversity at the latter rounds adds a lot to a tournament. It has in the past, and it's always nice.
Senegal, probably.
Yeah. Or even, I think, Morocco, apparently. Again, I'm all anecdotal. Apparently, they have a good squad.
They
and
do.
Then obviously, Egypt have a few.
But they're in a tough group. And Egypt could go far.
Egypt have
not.
Have,
really.
I think, like I did say, of Salah, what you need one player who can sneak you a goal every game, and, you know, you could get very, very far.
Yeah. Anyway, I think that sums us up for this week.
No, we could just keep listing.
You've more.
We could just keep listing countries if we want.
We listed players earlier. Who's the player of the season? We listed about 12 players.
I didn't really want an answer. I just wanted to spread a conversation.
And now we're listing countries who aren't even in the World Cup. I think they're going
to
go far.
Well, you see, what I'm doing, I'm looking at the clock here and I'm trying to tick us down as close to the end. Yeah, so we have to wrap it up. And I think we're pretty much at that point now.
I'm bored talking about football. I've reached my quota for the week.
Yeah, and you've been holding. I think you've been holding the phone now for 40 odd minutes. So yeah, it's a bit too much.
that work phone bill is going to come back to haunt you in a week's time.
Newstalk is paying for it.
I'll just tell management that now. Anyway, that's it for this week's show. Next week, we are going to have an interview with Dave Thomas, who's written a book about Jimmy Adamson, a Burnley club legend who actually turned down the England job just before Alf Ramsey took it. So it's an interesting piece. He had an interesting life. So that's it for this week's show. Killian, Derek.
Thanks, Raph.
Joe.
Raph, pleasure as always.
We might see you next week.
You will.
Take it away, Johan.